Talk Back with Gary Knoll, Sundays at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. No guests, no investigative reports, no issues. Lots of material on health and healing, with several in-depth analysis from Kirk Stokel. Are we all pre-diabetic? From Tyler Chambers, why so many arthritis sufferers fail to find relief, and from Judith Sherman, the effective approach to blunt those sugar surges. We have a lot to share. And as I do each day, early in the morning, generally at 4 o'clock, I look at all the different scientific literature throughout the world and find things that you have not been exposed to in the general media. And it all has to come from quality science. And that's what we share. That's why I always mention the publication and the institute so that you can have some confidence that this isn't something that is without good support. For example, second guessing your decision to do something in life generally leads to unhappiness. This is from Science Daily. This was done at Florida State University. And it was published in Personality and Individual Differences. And here's what it says, and I'll quote this. You're in search of a new coffee maker, and the simple quest becomes, well, an ordeal. After doing copious amounts of research and reading dozens of consumer reviews, you finally make a purchase, only to wonder, was this the right choice? Could I do better? What is the return policy? Reality checked. Is this you? If so, new research may shed some light on your inability to make a decision that you'll be happy with. And what they found is that there's been this whole idea in our society about maximizers. Maximizers tend to obsess over decisions, big or small, and then fret about their choices later. Satisfiers, on the other hand, tend to make a decision and live with it happily. Of course, there are shades of gray. In fact, there's a whole continuum of ways people avoid commitment without really avoiding it. So what does this mean, and why am I interested in this? Because I just finished today a major new work, and I've been working on it for 4 years, and this is what I do when I'm sitting in airports or in between shoots. I write. And I try to find a theme that is original, as best as I can make it, with insights that are not common. And this is about what the younger people, I believe, need to hear. And hence this whole new 800-page book I just finished today is about them. And my last interview for this was on Thursday and of this week, and it was at Occupy Wall Street Movement, but in two different cities. And when talking with the individuals, I asked, are you having any second thoughts about being here? And both said, in all cases, yes. One, they wanted to be in this environment because they felt it was important to protest many of the things that were wrong in society. I said, good. That's a good thing, especially if you've never done this before. Then comes the second guessing. But I don't want to get arrested. I don't want to end up on some government list. And I'm not going to stick around that long. I mean, some of the people will, but the vast majority of us come. We spend a day or half a day, and then we go home. Well, who were the majority of the people? In most of the cases, the vast majority of people came from what we would consider privileged backgrounds, meaning they had parents who were gainfully employed. Many were professionals. So this is their way of saying, I want to do something, and I'm going to protest. But it wasn't sustainable. And when I asked them about the complete disorganization and the lack of the basics, And when I mentioned one particular name to them, a name that every one of them should have known, that people in previous generations certainly would have known, because Gene Sharp, Professor Gene Sharp, in his book From Dictatorship to Democracy, is probably the single most important work to help individuals and movements in the last 50 years. If you were to go today to Syria, Egypt, to any of the major places where, even in small places like Lithuania, you would find individuals who want to make change and nonviolent change are using Gene Sharp's techniques. And one of the very first things he suggests out of about 190 things is you must be organized, you must all be on the same page, you must have leadership, and this must be articulate leadership, and you have to keep your focus. You can't be in 1,000 different places, otherwise nothing will get done. And if nothing, we have done everything in a different way in the United States with Occupy. There's no leaders, there's no single voice, there's a lot of people confronting, but there's no connection with the average American. This whole idea of 99-1 just simply is not real. On 60 Minutes, they did a little segment about people who have mortgages. 11 million families have mortgages. That's 44 million people that are underwater. That means that the value of their home will never come back. And it was showing one town in right outside of Cleveland that they're bulldozing down about 24,000 homes. And they're bulldozing them down because the moment a home is vacant, the thieves come in, they steal everything, and then it depreciates the value of everyone else in that neighborhood. And so the house value will never come back. So what they're doing, they're clearing the property and then giving that property to the neighbor so they have a larger, nice green space and at least holding the value of the property with the hope it'll come back. Well, the most common sense thing would be, why not simply demand that the banks, who've been given trillions of dollars, three banks alone were each given over $1.6 trillion, Citibank and Bank of America and J.P. Morgan, why not simply say, drop the value of the mortgage down to the market? So if the mortgage was $200,000, the market's $100,000, drop down the mortgage to $100,000. That way a person will have an incentive to stay in their house and pay their mortgage. Drop the interest from 8% down to 2%. You got it for zero, you're making a profit. Reasonable. But not when you have banks that are going to be bailed out no matter what mistake they make. And it's just stupid. It's stupid business. You think we have smart bankers? We have treacherous bankers, greedy bankers, maniacal-minded, but we don't have smart. Now, why are people paying mortgages that are underwater to banks that are corrupt, to a system that supports the banks and not them? That's conditioning, and that's part of that second-guessing. What if I give up on a mortgage and then the market comes back? Will I feel good about myself if I signed a contract and I've been led to believe that I should always honor my contracts and honor my word? And no one says, but the people who got you to sign the contract, they knowingly gave you a fraudulent appraisal. They appraised the property three times higher than what it was. These people gave you a liar's loan. They said your income was $200,000. It was $25,000. So you're wanting to honor someone who is not honorable on any level. That doesn't make any sense. Now person second guess, gee whiz, what should I do? That always leads to unhappiness. A person who knows that they have diabetes or arthritis or heart disease and they should change their diet, but they're afraid to change the diet. They're afraid to try alternative therapies. They're afraid to go too far from what everyone else expects of them. Because in America, so many people are doing everything wrong. I mean, everything you could do in life, they're doing wrong. So what happens is you lose the connection with those people who you were a part of if you decide to do it right. Do you want to be alone, possibly, doing it right, or in a lot of company, doing it wrong, and have their empathy? That leads to second guessing. And as a result, unhappiness. So when I was talking with the person down there and I explained to them an operation or Occupy Wall Street, I said, first off, when you closed down the Brooklyn Bridge, who did you hurt? Who did that inconvenience? And what did it do? Anyone from Goldman Sachs? Anyone from Bank of America? Anyone from the Federal Reserve say, gee whiz, they closed the bridge, we're in trouble now? No. But all the other people who would have been going down Canal Street, including myself that night, to talk with 200 of them, were inconvenienced 2 hours. That's that kind of mindless and anarchistic, well, we can close down something or we can take over something, let's do it. What is the purpose? You have to have a purpose. The purpose has to be unifying, productive, and be able to share with everyone why it was done to their benefit. It's missing completely. So when I asked these people, I said, have you second-guessed at all what you're doing? And one of the guys, Eric, was very honest, and he said, I've had nothing but second-guessing, because every time I turn around and I see that we should be doing it differently, I'm argued with by people who say, no, we don't want this movement to be like any other movement. When I bring up, well, what about the civil rights movement? What about some of the other movements? They were organized and they did well and they had a particular message. And should it just be about us and our comfort and our being fed in this encampment, or should it be about the larger message? How is we being here, he said, that he said to a group of them in their assembly, how does this really help anyone except us? And then they told him he was a troublemaker and told him not to come back. Now he has second thoughts about everything. So this is just this larger, and you'll see a much deeper analysis of what it means to be a young person, meaning up to about age 35 in this new work when it finally comes out. But it's written now, and it's all about young people and how they think, and the older generation, the baby boomer generation, who made so many mistakes and haven't owned those mistakes. So just imagine this. How can you not be a maximizer? And how can you not second guess yourself? Simple. Use your intuition. Intuition is an extraordinarily powerful, silent, but very effective monitor. It allows us to know if we're doing something that we should or not, if we're the right people in our lives or not, if we're in the right career, living in the right place, or not. I remember once I got a call from a broker who said, Gary, I got the most beautiful place. You got to come and look at it. You're looking for a place in the Catskills. So I drove up, and this person wasn't kidding. This was a beautiful lodge home, large, and it overlooked a whole valley. It was secluded, had about 100 acres. And it was very inexpensive. And I said, there's got to be something wrong. This is just too cheap. Well, you know, and the broker was telling me, no, no, no. And when I walked on the property, I just felt this energy. And it just felt terrible. So everything was beautiful. And then I said, I'm going to pass on it. You're going to pass on it? Why? I don't know. There's just something about the energy of this place. And everything in life is about energy. Turns out about a week later, he tells me that the person that owned the house was a warden of the prison. Just imagine all the epigenetic reality there. You become the energy of everyone around you and everything around you, and that becomes your energy. Then you take that energy into any environment you're in. Why do you think one negative person in an environment with 50 positive people has so much power to adversely affect those 50 people? Because all 50 of those people who are positive at one time were also around negative people. And those tapes are just waiting there for someone to turn them on. And all you have to do is start negating and second-guessing. And all your own tapes that you've been able to keep in neutral, they suddenly click on and now you're acting out. And then suddenly one person makes it viral and everybody gets negative. That's epigenetics. And then you second-guessed everything. So what you do is you simply use your intuition. You simply say, go to a quiet place and ask yourself, what does my intuition tell me? And follow that feeling. Because that's the only way your intuition can let you know you're doing it right, is what you feel. But you have to also separate out your conditioned feelings. And that's where meditation or prayer or that sense of solitude comes in, where you're in a quiet place with no distractions, and you ask that important question, should I do something or not? And once your intuition says yes or no, follow that. And almost always, then your conscious mind will show you why you made the right choice. Separately, dietary fibers from algae help weight loss. This is from the Faculty of Life Sciences, University of Copenhagen. And they're looking at brown algae boosting the body sensation of satiety so that people eat less and lose more weight. And that's good. It's easy to find that. It's alginates form a gel in the stomach, which strengthens the gastrointestinal satiety, meaning it turns off the signal to the brain because the gel takes up the space in the stomach. So if you're overweight, you're going to feel full, and you're going to turn off your I need more food signal going from the fundus nerve to the brain. So brown algae, and you can lose weight. Now, I'm always asked, what would be if I'm on a limited budget, but I want to help myself, I want to help maybe protect myself from carcinogens or environmental toxins, what's one of the best nutrients? Not too expensive. Well, a not so expensive nutrient is curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N. Now, it's an extraordinarily powerful spice. It's an Indian spice. But not all turmeric is alike. Curcumin is the active ingredient in turmeric. And it's one of the best ways that we can help stop a lot of the negative things in our body. So when you take curcumin, I suggest anywhere from 400 on the low end to 5,000 on the higher end. It can turn off the inflammatory responses in the body. So if you have diabetes, heart disease, cancer, arthritis, any form of brain problems, it can help turn off the inflammation. It also has an enormous amount of antioxidant protection. And that's what makes it work. Now, curcumin is neither absorbed nor retained well in the blood, which is a challenge. But that's why you have to use a little higher doses of it. But once you get it into your body, you're going to see that your body is benefiting from it. So make sure you get your curcumin. That can help you. It also can help negate some of the effects of radiation that's in our system. Every day, I see more and more Americans are becoming obese, and especially teenagers and children. Most people will only know if they're diabetic when they've had a blood test. But almost all the blood tests out there, I find, are wrong, meaning the level that you should be at is much higher than what you really should be. You should be much lower than that. I'll get to that in a moment. So I'm asking everyone, simply have a diabetes test. It's quick, it's inexpensive, to know what it is. Even if a doctor assures you that your blood sugar is normal, there's an enormous amount of documentation that you may be at a significant risk of premature death unless you achieve a optimal 24-hour glucose control. Now, I've warned my audience about the silent dangers when fasting blood sugar exceeds 85 milligrams per deciliter. And now that is being validated by a lot of new science. And even more insidious are data showing that blood sugar spikes that occur after each meal dramatically increase the risk of cardiovascular disease, retinal damage, and cancer. And unless steps are taken to suppress the after-meal sugar surges, every large meal you eat can trigger a dangerous metabolic cascade that results in cell damage and accelerated aging. Because diabetics and pre-diabetics age faster than almost any other group. If you're overweight, you're aging much faster than if you were not overweight. Now, one of the things that can help you, and I try to look at things that are practical, is green coffee bean extract. There's particular chemicals that target a critical enzyme involved in after-meal blood sugar spikes. And when tested on humans in a placebo-controlled study, the natural extract produced an astounding 32% drop in after-meal blood sugar surges. Now, that is a big help. Now, the percentage of adults who suffer chronic high blood pressure is just mind-boggling. Many of you know that a year ago I published a book called No More Diabetes, and I had a documentary that went with it. And when I was doing the research to get the most current numbers, one report evaluated 46,000 middle-aged individuals and found that 80% had high blood sugar levels. 80%. These were just random selections. Another study involving 11,000 40-year-olds in that area showed 85% had fasting blood sugar levels above what is considered normal. Now, since incidence of disease starts to increase when fasting blood sugar rises above these levels, this means the vast majority of people over the age of 35 in the United States endure chronic cellular damage associated with elevated blood sugar. So when you think that that sweet tooth isn't costing you, oh, it is. Trust me, it is. There is an epidemic of elevated blood sugar, and it's only going to accelerate age-related disease, so you've got to deal with it. Now, there are two major problems with the way mainstream medicine views blood sugar. First, the so-called normal range for fasting blood sugar is still set way too high. The current criteria specify that you're not diabetic unless blood fasting glucose exceeds 125 milligrams per deciliter. The range between 100 and 125 milligrams per deciliter is considered pre-diabetic. In other words, with a blood sugar reading of 99 milligrams, your doctor will, well, they'll tell you that, you know, everything is fine and send you home, ignorant of the dangers lurking inside your body. Now, recall that optimal glucose control occurs when fasting blood sugar is kept between 70 and 85 milligrams. This means that fasting glucose levels that doctors accept today as normal are in reality dangerously elevated. And second, mainstream doctors do not tell their patients about the risks of after-meal or what is called a postprandial blood sugar spike. And after every meal, these sudden surges in blood sugar damage delicate blood vessels in your brain and your heart and your kidneys and your eyes, as well as accelerate the aging of cells and tissues throughout your body. So utilizing only fasting blood sugar readings does not detect the perilous after-meal glucose spikes that present at increased risk of death. Now, the critical truth is that the standard definitions of diabetes are dangerously outdated. Scientific research shows that after-meal spikes in blood sugar are potentially more damaging than elevation of fasting blood sugar. For example, in people with so-called normal blood sugars and normal glucose tolerance tests, the risk of a heart attack increases by 58% for each 21 milligrams deciliter increase in after-meal blood sugar. And for a similar after-meal glucose elevation, risk of dying from cardiovascular disease increased by 26%. Now, control for after-meal glucose needs to be recognized as a critical component. When doctors don't realize that it's an isolated fasting glucose reading fails to provide that information. So you go in and you're tested and you fasted, he's going to get one measurement. What about the measurement after you've eaten a meal? That's important also. So I've seen people who had a 95 milligram per deciliter fasting glucose, and then it was 150 milligrams immediately after they ate something. So if blood sugar ever drops too low, death rapidly ensues as brain cells can't function without adequate glucose. And to protect against acute death in the near starvation state, our ancestors encountered the body developed compensatory mechanisms to ensure that glucose levels don't fall too low. The problem with these protective mechanisms is that they cause the majority of aging people today to suffer dangerously elevated blood sugar, as widespread famine no longer exists in our society. The liver stores sugar, that means glucose, in the form called glycogen. and it releases just enough to maintain a steady blood sugar level. In healthy individuals, this process of glucose release is important. It's suppressed after a meal to prevent blood sugar levels from rising excessively. Well, when this process protected our ancestors from acute starvation and death, the impact on people today is just the opposite. As we age, this internal control mechanism malfunctions, resulting in dangerously high blood glucose levels. And another factor causing elevated glucose involves excess creation of new glucose in the body. In healthy people, a biochemical process creates new glucose from other substances, such as amino acids, when blood sugar levels are too low. And aging people often make too much glucose from all kinds of foods, even when blood glucose levels are already too high. There's an enzyme involved in gluconeogenesis and glyconeogenesis, and is called glucose-6-phosphatase. And with increasing age and rising blood sugar levels, control of glucose-6-phosphatase can become impaired. So what can we do? How can we get a handle on this? Well, first, start eating more foods that are in the nut, the seed, like sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, chia seeds, all the nuts. They slow down how fast this conversion occurs from a food to a sugar. So you have low glycemic foods. Berries are good. They're low too. Strawberries, blackberries, blueberries, raspberries, cherries. Those are good also. And then supplement properly. And also make sure you're getting whole grains and not processed grains. And then use something that is a known chlorogenic acid. It's green coffee bean, and that can modulate after meal blood sugar surges. I suggest you take one or two after a meal, and that can make a big difference, because green coffee bean extract, it's not like you're drinking coffee, it's an extract from the green coffee bean, is found in the unroasted coffee beans, and once purified and standardized, produces high levels of chlorogenic acid and other polyphenols that suppress this excess blood sugar spiking. So that can help you. And I would say in 200 milligram range, it should make a big difference. So those are just something simple, something we can do, something that's not that hard and certainly not expensive. Now I'm going to open up our lines for people to call in and share their comments on any issue that you find important. And you can call us at 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a brief break, come back, and take on the issues that you want to hear about. Please stay with us. Audience today. In fact, this is a record for our talkback program. By the way, tomorrow evening we'll have a really interesting 1 hour program on the Progressive Commentary Hour. If you haven't had a chance to listen to it, please go to the archives. It's non-commercial, it's free. And these are some of the most powerful individual programs on radio. It's certainly the most downloaded program of any radio program in the United States that we're aware of. So hundreds of thousands of people are downloading that show each week. So that's going to be live tomorrow evening, 7 to 8 p.m. Now let's say hello to Pam from New Jersey. Hi, Pam. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. August 30th, I got 2 shots of lidocaine, L-I-D-O-C-A-I-N-E, 2%, an anesthesia painkiller in my forefinger and middle finger to remove 2 small warts. And that night I had a severe headache, and then morning my right knee was swollen double front and back with tremendous pain.
What you have is you have had a reaction to this, not uncommon. I'm surprised that your physician didn't ask you if you had any known allergens or do a simple skin test to see if there's an allergen. And if you look under lycocaine allergens in the physician's desk reference, it'll show you how common they are. One of the ways, if we've had a bad reaction and the medication is no longer actively in our system, but the effects of what it caused are, and that's that could go on for weeks, is to do a simple high alkaline detox. First, to lots of alkaline water, up around 8.5 pH. At 8.5 to 9 pH, the water is extremely alkaline. Now, since 72% of our body weight is water, by having a high electrolyte, high alkalinity, it helps to remove the effects, the residual effects of any of the medicines that could have had a reaction. Then, understand the single most important nutrient to go into your body to help it with any reaction, bad reaction. And this would be true if it was a sinus reaction or a headache reaction or a gastrointestinal reaction or a COX-2 inhibiting reaction, would be chlorophyll. Chlorophyll is phenomenal, but I would suggest taking chlorophyll with aloe vera. Aloe vera has over 200 different healing phytonutrients, and one turns off inflammation due to a full spectrum of problems, and then the chlorophyll bathes the cells and purifies the blood and can take these metabolites out of the system. In effect, they chelate out the metabolites. So you want something that's a natural chelator. Now, by adding in vitamin C in high doses with the chlorophyll and the aloe, like 2 ounces of aloe with about 16 ounces of chlorophyll 3 times a day, and maybe 2,000 milligrams of vitamin C each of those times, then you would do a great deal of good to help your body rebalance itself from the allergic reaction you've had. Okay, all the best to you, Pam. Liz from New York. Hi, Liz. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Gary. I just want to ask 3 short questions. Can you give me a referral to someone who can be good in detecting brain allergies? And also, can you give me a referral to an immunologist? And the last one is, do you know of any alternative studies that are going on right now for allergies and using alternative medicine, you have the clinical study?
Well, there's a Dr. Raphael Kelman in Manhattan who's very good with allergies. Yeah. And one of the best allergy diagnosis persons is Dr. Martin Feldman. That's his specialization. Helping first define what a person's allergic to by using the body's own feedback mechanism through kinesiology, and then rebalancing it with homeopathic zeolites so that you're doing a very subtle rebalancing. And so he would be the best, and he's at 212-744-4413. Now, to your last question about the larger aspect of allergies, understand that all an allergy is simply an inappropriate response by the body's immune system to anything. It could be water, food, or air, or even a something tactile. You could lay down at night on a sheet that was washed in bleach, and you wouldn't know it. Your body will. And then it picks up the response, and then it's acting out. And the immune system is a highly complex defense mechanism. But what it's meant to do, it's meant to help us fight different types of infections. And how does it go about doing this and helps mobilize the body's white blood cells to fight them? Well, the immune system can wrongly identify a non-toxic substance as an invader. And the white blood cells overreact, creating more damage to the body than the invader. And hence, your allergic response becomes a disease in and of itself. Now, you can typically have responses, nasal congestion, coughing, wheezing, itching, shortness of breath, headaches, fatigue, hives, skin rashes. All of those can be due to allergic reaction, not just to pollen or dust and different metals, and even metals in cosmetics, and dust mites and animal hair, all forms of things, just like Pam just called in. Many people are allergic to penicillin and aspirin and then benzoic acid and sulfur dioxide. A lot of people drink wine and don't know that there's sulfates in it, and they have allergic reaction. Their face gets flushed, they're pulsing in the head, their eyes get bloodshot, they get a very swollen tongue, and they can actually die. That's from allergic reaction. Chemicals found in soaps and washing detergent, cleaning supplies. So, and molds, people don't realize molds are living organisms. They're microscopic, but they're living organisms. And if you're allergic to them, and if you have mildew or wetness in a place like a bathroom, a sink, under a refrigerator, all that then causes these mold spores to go in the air. And molds can both be destructive and beneficial. Molds help to make cheese and fertilize gardens, and they speed the decaying process of falling leaves, but they can also cause reactions. So what do you do? I believe that we've gone about allergies altogether wrong. And I determined this when I had a woman come to see me, a very successful Wall Street woman, Harvard grad, who, very intelligent, but she showed me a list of foods that she could not eat because she'd been to 7 separate immunologists and allergy specialists, and she only left with like 4 foods she could eat. And I said to her, I said, well, what do you expect me to do? Your doctors are telling you that there's 96 foods you're allergic to. If you have these, you overreact. And she said, well, I was hoping, you know, my sister's the one who brought me here. I didn't know anything about you, but she listens to you. And I said, well, I would approach this differently. I would say I'd build up your immune system instead of working on your allergies. It's your immune system that is in defect. They hadn't tested her immune system. So I had her take some tests to determine her immune system. Sure enough, her immune system was really in a bad way. And so then she had to go through a whole detoxification because that's the first step. You know, like every day, 5 times a day, taking a non-dairy acidophilus, which is a probiotic, because that is an immune enhancer. And then taking calcium magnesium in higher doses because that is very important also. And inositol hexophosphate, or IP6. That helps, and having a juice made up of garlic and onion as a base of it with cayenne and horseradish and wasabi, and then thin it out. About 90% of it was thinned out with celery and apple, and then also have very high B complex 3 times a day and lots of B12. Well, when she started all this stuff, she thought it was all nonsense, but in about 3 weeks she came back and she said that she was feeling much better. And I also had her taking Boswellia, which is known as Indian frankincense. It works very well. And Eyebright also can stop hay fever. And nettle, which is very good, reduces inflammation in the sinus cavities. And then wild yam and herba mate. These are all helping the immune system. But the juicing is what did the most. And she was juicing up to 15 juices a day. And getting more energy. And it didn't take long until her underlying immune system became so strong and her reactions less and less until finally she was able to go back to a healthy diet. And then I found out that her doctors were telling her in order to help her immune system that she should have some wine each day. And she was having wine twice a day. When I asked her to bring in the bottle of wine, it had sulfites, and sulfites are common food additives, and used as sanitary agent and preservatives. What they do, they prevent discoloration of the wine. So it holds this wine, but it's used in all kinds of supermarket foods and restaurant foods as well. And but in her case, she was severely reactive to sulfates. So every time she had that, her breathing became difficult, and she developed severe headaches and a stuffy and runny nose and flushing. And it just is amazing that no one figured out it was a sulfate. So when she got rid of the sulfate and she stopped having that, then she was able to regain a diet. So it's that two-phase approach. Also, I would suggest for people to have a heavy metal test taken, because aluminum toxicity. Now, aluminum is not a heavy metal, but it can be toxic if present in even small amounts. And it goes to the brain. And then you end up with aluminum toxicity. It's very similar to Alzheimer's. And you have to chelate it out, because it can affect you on many different levels. And it's excreted through the kidney, and it can cause toxic reactions in the kidney. And the accumulation of aluminum salts in the brain has been implicated in seizures and reduced mental facility. So you want to do chelation therapy to make sure you get rid of the heavy metals, because they will directly contribute to allergies. Okay? So those are the suggestions I would have for you. Hope that helps you. All right?
Okay.
All the best to you. Bye. Now, let's shift over before I take some more calls, and I will take some more calls. You're, you know, happy to take your calls. If you call in, 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. All right, I'll take some calls in a few moments. But I promise you I'd give some more information on arthritis. And in fact, when I return to the city, I'll for those of you who live in Toronto, next week, starting Tuesday through Sunday night, I'll be in Toronto for 2 days filming and lecturing, Montreal for 2 days filming and lecturing, then Vancouver, and then I come down the West Coast the following week in Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego, over through Denver, Phoenix, and back finally to New York, and that's where I'll be on the road for the next almost 3 weeks. And then I'll be in New York for several months, because it's a long trip I'm on. Getting a lot of exciting things filmed, and for 5 separate films I'm working on. In any case, I have been allowing some people to come on the film shoots, on the sets when I'm filming, if they find it of interest, some of the unique people I'm filming. And it's kind of a kick for them to see some of these great minds that are out there and doing an hour and a half, 2 hour film interview, and then off to another city. In any case, I'm going to be doing a special health support group for 4 weeks on arthritis. I can't call in now. It's not possible. I'll announce it when we're going to take the calls, because that health support group has to get a date set, and we don't have one yet. Anyhow, I figured out how to reverse arthritis in most cases within 4 weeks. And people don't realize that our society has been programmed to believe that complex medical problems can be fixed with simple solutions. It's, and what do people do? Well, they take aspirin, and they take ibuprofen, and they take naproxen. So if an arthritis sufferer takes any of these pain relievers on a regular basis, as most do, as it suggests they take it every day, they're likely to encounter some very serious side effects. Kidney failure, liver failure, gastrointestinal hemorrhaging. About 24,000 people die each year from just the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories they take for arthritis alone. Now, before I get into what I would consider the natural approach, just understand that why. Why don't we have people just preventing arthritis in the first place, but being able to get over it so quickly? Well, it's because the COX-2 inhibiting drugs like Vioxx or Bextra, which were first approved by the FDA, and though we warned at the time that they were out in the market, that by blocking only the COX-2 enzyme and not also COX-1 and 5-LOX, the users of these drugs increase the risk of heart attack and stroke. And while most of the people in this audience certainly were spared these lethal side effects because they didn't take them, the average American did, and as a result, 60,000 Americans died of heart attack and stroke, and 150,000 continued to have strokes and heart attacks, though didn't die, though there was no long-term follow-up. Well, if you take an honest look at all the causes of arthritis, that's where you have to start. And I'm going to share something now with you that can help everyone who wants to prevent arthritis or has arthritis. I've come up with about 10 completely preventable causes of osteoarthritis. First off, if you're overweight, no one can be healthy and overweight. Why? Because the heavier you are, you have a greater mechanical weight-bearing load, and that's greater physical pressure upon the connective tissue and the joint surfaces. But also, the effect that excess fat has in increasing inflammatory molecules that attack and damage joint cartilage. If you're overweight, you have more pro-inflammatory cytokines in your body. It's just that simple. You can't feel them, you can't see them, but they're there. Next, it's a simple little biochemical configuration called a prostaglandin E2. There are several types of prostaglandins, but the E2 is the bad one. It causes pain and inflammation in your joints. Now, the enzyme that converts arachidonic acid from that steak, that hamburger, that hot dog, that fish, that chicken that you just ate, to prostaglandin E2 in the body is called COX-2. It's a COX-2 is a cyclooxygenase 2. Now, there are drugs, patented drugs, like Vioxx and Bextra. And what will happen is you take a Bextra, these drugs, you end up having an increased risk of heart attack. And they create adverse effects on critical enzymes in the vascular endothelial cells that line the blood vessel walls. Now, there are safe ways of dealing with that. And I have spoken at great length, like Somerian, quercetin, green tea extract, resveratrol, but that's for another discussion. I'm only telling you now how to prevent them. Get rid of the meat. All meats. Get rid of all animal proteins. Animal proteins are where you get arachidonic acid. Arachidonic acid is the cause of the prostaglandin E2. And that stimulates the COX-2. Then you have what is called leukotriene B4. It destroys your joint cartilage. The enzyme that converts arachidonic acid to leukotriene B4 in the body is called 5-LOX, or lipoxygenase. Now, how do you stop that? How do you stop that conversion? Well, your omega-3 fatty acids, fish oils, boswellia, and curcumin, C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, curcumin, and boswellia, B-O-S-W-E-L-L-I-A. Then you have nuclear factor kappa B. Nuclear factor kappa B ignites production of systemic inflammatory molecules that attack joint linings. And then the nuclear kappa or factor kappa B can be suppressed with the things I talked about already today. Fish oil, antioxidants. Garlic is great, super great. Ginger. Well, just think of sauteing some garlic and ginger and putting it into your brown rice. Well, that will help it. And curcumin. And that all stops that process. So you can turn it off right there and then. Then you have a hypersensitive immune system. I just spoke with Pam and with another person about this, so just understand, when you have a hypersensitive immune system because you're constantly exposing yourself to something that's causing an autoimmune reaction, that means that you're hurting yourself. Why? Because the latest research, it's not even out in the market yet, shows that osteoarthritis, your sensitized T cells attack joint collagen and directly contribute to joint damage. And low dose, I'll get to how I would suggest do that later. It's about vitamin C. And a major component of joint tissue is hyaluronic acid. It's a H-Y-A, hyla, luronic, L-U-R-O-N-I-C. Its natural function is to lubricate and cushion the joints from repeated impacts. It's also involved in cartilage regeneration. And one notable effect of hyaluronic acid is to inhibit an enzyme called matrix metaprotolase 13 that degrades joint cartilage. Well, hyaluronic acid does not absorb well by itself, but when it is dissolved in a phospholipid-rich solution like krill oil, K-R-I-L-L, it improves it. And then you have the very nasty inflammatory cytokines, such as tumor necrosis factor alpha. It directly attacks your joint linings. Krill oil, K-R-I-L-L, reduces the infiltration of destructive cytokines into the joint linings. And vitamin C with quercetin, and also what is called astaxanthin. Astaxanthin, A-S-T-A-X-A-N-T-H-I-N. It reduces the production of inflammatory cytokines. And, of course, just normal aging does this. So I want to see you start to protect yourself. Sesame lignans will help you, and GLA will help you, gamma-linolenic acid. And prostaglandin E1 is a natural inflammatory suppressing hormone-like substance. It comes from gamma-linolenic acid, and that will help you. So those are some things that can help everyone in this audience start to prevent the arthritis that so many people suffer from. Let's say hello to Douglas from Toronto. Hi, Douglas. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. Thank you for what you already done for me and before. I have a problem. I have a test, and I have a 3.0 centimeter benign cyst in the lower pole of my left kidney. Can you tell me some supplement I can take to get rid of it?
You're not going to get rid of a cyst in the kidney with a supplement. What you can do is you can prevent the cysts from getting larger, and you can help the body in the same way that you would help a person with any type of fibrous material. I would look at pancreatin, which is very important, proteolytic enzymes, essential, vitamin K, about 100 micrograms twice a day. I would also look at the essential fatty acids because that turns off inflammation from a cyst. Zinc is important in immune function and healing of the tissue. Coenzyme Q10, which acts as an immunostimulant, and coenzyme A, which supports the immune system's detoxification of a cyst. Then you have to look at L-cysteine and L-methionine. Both are important, and alpha-lipoic acid helps the pancreas to function properly and controls metabolism. That's important. I would also throw in alfalfa extract, boswellia, bromelain, cayenne, ginger, and peppermint, all of which turn off the inflammation, because that's what you want. And you want to turn off inflammation, and you want to get rid of the acid base in the diet, because that's what causes cysts in the first place. In fact, fibrocysts in the breast almost always due to coffee. You get coffee out of a person's diet, and those fibrocysts begin to dissolve. So that's what I would suggest as a way of helping the situation. All the best to you. I'm Gary Noll. I'm looking at the clock here, and we're out of time. Have a nice day, everyone.